ブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブブWhat's the matter, Paul?
Acapella harmonizing. You don't get this on any other show.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert. All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax. We might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Are we going to start the show, Mr. Frodo?
Oh, come on, Samwise. I think we should have a second breakfast.
I haven't even had my first breakfast. I need to go back out.
You sound less like Samwise and more like, I can't think of what the actor's name is. He's the guy who played Iron Fist, not Iron Fist, the, what's it, meet Harold Meacham on the Iron Fist show?
Really?
When he was in, what's it called, Van Helsing, he played, like, the monk assistant.
Oh, that's right, he did. Hey, wasn't that same guy in 300?
I don't know about 300, but he was in Lord of the Rings.
He was?
He played Faramir.
Oh, that's right. You know, I thought that guy looked familiar. But I didn't bother to look up IMDb. I relied on my memory, and of course I quickly forgot.
And my life is forfeit.
Well, I don't read the emails. Listen, Michael. Mr.
I am going to send you the longest email you've ever had.
Yeah, you got some work there, buddy.
MP3 of it.
You're going to have to do paragraphs yourself.
Subparagraph 1. Section 3 of my...
I have been busy as shit all week. Work's been a pain in the ass this week. And you know what I've been thinking all week when I should be working? What 5 annuals would I put on my list?
Port 69 of my email on annuals.
Port 69 of my email for annuals.
You got that joke, did you? No sexual reference in there at all. Yeah, what do you got, a cold? Is it an English cold? Is it a man cold?
No, it's a proper fracking cold, and I've fought it because I am manliest of manly men. I got nothing but grief last week when I started with this, but have I had any time off? No. Have I had any medicine? No. Have I been to the doctors? No. Because I am made of strong northern stuff.
No, because you're a dumbass.
That, yeah. Everyone else gets in the family and they're all like, oh, I'm too ill to do anything today. Yeah.
You missed the punchline now. You just say that, and I'm tough and I'm this and I'm that.
And cough into my death.
Like, there you go. Ah. You want to do this? Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast in which me and my two compatriots are reviewing and tearing apart every episode of the great Star Trek series Deep Space Nine. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined today by my two buddies, as always, and my puppy, Dr. Bill Robinson.
Hey, I am 99% me and 1% Gul Dukat's mistress.
Ew. Would you have one of those heritage tests?
Well, yeah.
And as always, we are joined by Sir Andrew Leyland.
I am 1% me and 99% Kira Narisi's pants.
You wish you were 99% in Kira Narisi's pants.
And why not?
I thought you were more that pointy thing in Gul Dukat's butt.
Are you trying to say I'm a poison quill?
No. Would that be a Peter Quill? Sorry, that's just...
Both are prickly.
That thing looked sharp. Oh, sorry. Andy's got a cold, and somehow over Skype I got it.
Yeah, somehow I passed it over to Bill.
I was fine yesterday.
Perhaps he left it in some sort of a time release capsule when he was there.
It's an English bomb. An English code bomb. You don't expect me to cough, do you?
Yeah, Mr. Bond, I expect you to cough up your lungs.
I expect you to vomit.
Oh, so, Mr. Bond.
How are we for Star Trek news, Cass?
Trailer for Discovery dropped.
Yes, criticism I saw is it looks too much like Star Wars.
I thought it looked too much like the J.J. Abrams movies.
Well,
it's probably the same thing.
Well, I thought it wasn't supposed to be, but maybe it is, because the Klingons... Okay, here's my... I watched the trailer once, because I just hadn't had time to get back to it, and I was confused. Insert pun there. Bill's confused. I was confused by the scene where they say, oh, we have warp signatures coming in, and they're all Klingon warp signatures on the little screen, and then they show these aliens, and I'm like, are those Klingons? Are the Klingons behind them? Where are the Klingons? Are those guys supposed to be the Klingons? I guess those, because that would be the, like, Abrams versus Klingons, the bald guys with the little spikes in their head or whatever. I don't know. I was a little confused. Yeah, I was kind of confused. I was like, what? Huh? I thought this was 10 years before. What happened? Oh. And I thought it was supposed to be set in the original universe, but I guess not.
No, that's...
Whatever.
It was all right. There's not really a lot to judge from it, and we didn't get any Jason Isaacs in it.
No,
so we still don't know what he's playing.
Maybe he's a Klingon. Maybe he was in that trailer and we couldn't even tell.
No, he's playing a captain.
Oh.
So I didn't think there was enough to really judge from it. I think what is
this price point going to be on? CBS, because I saw, of course, it was a post, so the person may have been wrong. I thought they said something like $1.99 a month or $3.99. I thought it was $5.99 for the CBS All Access.
No idea. Can't help you. We're getting it on Netflix.
We're getting it on Netflix.
Hey, piss off.
You get it on Netflix.
You get everything first, apart from all the Marvel movies. So you can stop complaining.
You got Star Wars first, didn't you?
Not the 1977 one, no.
Who cares about that? We've all seen it. I don't care what happened. I probably didn't watch Star Wars till 1978, so I didn't know anyway.
Right.
You get it first. Of course, I just undercut my own argument because I was just whining. You, well, whatever.
I don't care that who gets it first. I care that they get it easily. They want to subscribe to a whole new service for it.
Well, I mean, I figure... Well, see, I wonder if they'll do what Hulu does and only keep so many episodes up and then drop them. Because if they keep them all up and, you know, maybe I'll just, you know... Because it's been expanded to 15 episodes from 10.
It's got a pickup, hasn't it, already?
Yeah. So... Can I just buy the CBS thing for 1 month? Like, maybe they'll have a 1 month free trial and I'll just watch one season and then cut it off. And then I didn't have to spend any money to watch it at all.
I'm sure that's their business plan.
Yeah. So.
Okay, so that's our Star Trek news.
That's our load of Star Trek excitement news. Space Baseball is on hiatus right now. Because they don't have summer in space like they do in on the States here.
Oh, right, so you're saying it's like us?
Why, you don't have baseball either.
No, but we have a summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, something like that, yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about. Sure, just agree with the English guy.
Agree with me.
He's English, he's smart.
I wouldn't go that far.
He's like a Packlet, but in reverse.
I need things to make me go. That's why I eat a lot of bran.
Whoa. TMI, as Paul would say. TMI.
Anyway.
The initials. I just say too much information.
Well, TMI could also be 3 Mile Island, so yeah, I guess you need might want to, clarify that. And anybody
anyway.
Born in 1985 and later probably doesn't even know what 3 Mile Island is, so let's moving on.
Yes, 3 Mile Island.
Just see X-Men Origins Wolverine if you want to see what 3 Mile Island is.
Yes. Should we just talk about a Deep Space Nine episode, then?
I guess,
yeah.
So today we're here to speak about Season 4, Episode 4, Indiscretion.
A hopeless rescue.
It's 6 years since Ravenok disappeared. Odds are everyone on board is dead.
A hidden agenda.
If my daughter is still alive, I have no choice but to kill her.
A buried past.
If you hurt that girl, I'll kill you.
Now a deadly hunt begins.
DuPont!
And Kira is the child's only hope.
Father?
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Directed by LeVar Burton.
Yay!
Story by Nicholas Correa.
Yay!
Tony Marbury and Jack Trevino. And the guest appearances are Mark Alamo as Gul Dukat, Penny Johnson as Cassidy Yates, Roy Brocksmith as Raza, and Sila Baten as Zial. You gave a particular yay on Nicholas Correa. I'm not familiar with him. What do you
Nicholas,
have to say?
Nicholas Correa is a writer of particularly American television of note throughout the 70s and 80s. Pretty much worked on everything. Probably best known for The Incredible Hulk. He also wrote and directed The Incredible Hulk Returns, which had Thor in it.
That's
he
a good
also,
thing.
He also apparently worked on Airwolf.
Yes, he did. He did indeed work on Airwolf.
Oh, I have a song for our never-to-be-released Deep Space Nine album for this episode. It would be to the tune of Under Pressure. Indiscretion. I've got a mistress.
It's one step up from Ice Ice Baby.
Oh, please. I don't want to get into that discussion. No, it's not din 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 din. It's din 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 din. Yeah, okay, I shut up.
Did he really say that?
Yes, that was his whole argument. It's like change one note in the yeah. I said stop, corroborate, and listen. Din, 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 din. Just, now I'm doing Ice Ice Baby. God damn you! Damn you to hell! Indiscretion. I've got a majoring mistress. And another kid I'm gonna kill. Okay, alright. That's just falling apart all over itself. Read the plot!
So, a Bajoran smuggler tells Kira he has recovered a piece of metal that might be from the Ravenok, a Cardassian ship that disappeared 6 years ago with a group of Bajoran prisoners. A good friend of Kira's was among those lost, and she makes immediate plans to investigate, but learns a Cardassian representative wants to accompany her. Kira reluctantly agrees, then discovers that the representative is her nemesis, Dukat. The two take a runabout, meet the smuggler, and authenticate the metal fragments, which was found in the Dozeria system. They then land on a desert planet in that system and encounter the wreckage of the Ravenok. Kira and Dukat notice 12 graves near the site, but since several more people were on the ship, they conclude that some survivors may still be alive. First, however, Dukat opens the graves in order to identify bodies, and is overcome with grief when he finds the remains of a Bajoran female who was his mistress. Kira's surprise turns to hope when it turns out that her friend was not among the dead. They soon set off on foot, scanning the planet for survivors. While setting up camp, Dukat reveals that he had a daughter with his mistress, Tora Zial, a girl who is one of the possible survivors. Unfortunately, if he finds her alive, he'll have to kill her. Kira tells Dukat she won't allow him to kill Zial, but he insists that if her existence is revealed, he'll lose his wife, his family, and his unstable position in Cardassian government. Soon, Kira and Dukat discover a mining operation of Bajoran and Cardassian prisoners, supervised by members of a race known as the Breen. Dukat sees his half-Cardassian, half-Bajoran daughter among the prisoners. Kira and Dukat, disguised as Breen, overcome the guards and round up the prisoners. Kira is crushed to learn that her friend died 2 years earlier, but Dukat is only interested in finding his daughter. When the Breen guards attack, Dukat escapes from Kira's gaze and runs off after Zial. When he finds her, she instantly recognizes her father, thrilled to see him despite the fact that he is aiming a phaser rifle at her. Kira arrives and tries to stop him, and the little girl realizes what is happening. Still, Zial refuses to run, telling her father she'd rather die if she can't go with him. She hugs him affectionately, and Dukat, shaken with emotion, decides to take Zial home, even if it costs him everything he has. And that's the end. Darn, that's the end. So, I thought this was okay. I didn't think this was a bad episode. A little heavy on the schmaltz for me. I don't know. A little predictable. At that point. I don't know, just too much of like a special episode for me. So I thought it was, like I said, I thought it was okay. I thought it was entertaining, and, you know, I wasn't bored by it, but it just didn't cut it for me, and I really, really didn't like the Bajoran Total Recall smuggler. He seemed like just a little dirtbag. I don't know.
I kind of think he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
I do think he was supposed to be. I just don't get it. I don't know. I expect somebody in that position to be just a little bit more slick. Not look like
really
you,
fond what? Of that actor. I've never really been fond of that actor. Nothing against him. I don't know if it's the roles he always plays.
But he was the one from the Packlet episode, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was the guy who was engaging Riker in.
He wasn't in the Packlet episode. That you're thinking of. He's in a different episode where he's teaching.
He wasn't a Packlet, though.
He's doing some kind of war game scenario with them, and Data beats him at that funny finger puppet thing that they play.
No, actually, Data loses to him immediately, and then they do it a second time around, and Data doesn't try to beat him, he just tries to hold him to a stalemate.
Tie him.
That's it. Yeah.
And he does.
Yeah.
And that's like totally embarrassing for him.
Yeah, because Data's not even trying to win, and he doesn't understand the point of playing if you're not trying to win, and so on and so forth. So, yeah.
Yeah, and he's a pompous little ass in that one, and he's a little dirtbag in this one, and he's almost equally annoying in both, as far as I'm concerned. Although, in Total Recall, I thought he served his purpose. He's the guy who sweats and gets a bullet in the head for it.
Go on, Bill.
Yeah, I think, as I said earlier, I fell asleep twice during this episode, and I don't know if it's because I'm not talking in the same sitting. Each time I watched this, I fell asleep. Now, it may have been because it was late at night, and that might have. And there is some slow portions in this episode that don't really hold you. And then I think that's why it's an okay episode. Because you think an episode with Gul Dukat and Kira alone for the whole episode pretty much should keep you going. And it does have its moments. One of the good ones that at the same time is I found to be hilarious and then horrible was the one when they're in the cave and Gul Dukat sits on the little spiny pointy thing. And she's pulling the thing out of his butt, and then there's this whole thing with the dermal regenerator. But then their laughter seems so fake and forced that I'm just like, oh god, this, I'm embarrassed for this scene. And I don't know, it just, did you guys get that from that scene? That they're like they were trying too hard to laugh.
Yeah.
Like it didn't seem natural.
Yeah, I think it's one of the few places where Nana Visitor doesn't quite nail it as an actress is the extreme of hysterically giggling. But a lot of people can't pull that off. Sarah Michelle Gellar couldn't pull it off in Buffy either. Like that idea of just uncontrollable giggles, just there must be something about that that's hard to act. I don't know, because I'm not an actor. But yeah, she didn't really pull that off, which is a shame. But go on, because I think I'm going to give Paul exactly what he wants in this episode.
I'm not sure what that is.
I don't know either.
If you've not got anything else, I'll do my bit. It's up to you.
Okay. I'll just chime in later.
I am going to vehemently disagree with both of you.
You love it
when this happens, don't you? This one was a top-notch episode for exploring the new dynamic between Kira and Golda Kat, where they are now both being forced to work together despite being enemies for many, many years. And it's interesting to me that Dukat is the one who's much more willing to accept this status quo than Kira. I thought that said an awful lot about war, in that Dukat is quite willing to just go with where the captain is. This is the new status quo. I am a soldier. I now accept this. You are now my friend. Whereas Kira is the one who can't let go of the past. I love this whole idea of Dukat having somewhat of a crush on her, because she was the only one who ever thwarted him, and the idea that Kira would find this abhorrent, I think is really interesting. And we know from the future of the show that this does go to some interesting places. I like the idea of the fact that he will have a daughter, because this goes all the way, there are many, many wars that we can probably all name where mixed breed offspring come out of that war and then have to kind of live with the situation that they find themselves, where they're probably not wanted by the father's or the mother's side of the family because of what they are and what they represent. So all that was quite interesting, and that was a lovely flip on what I just said, that Kira was the one who was willing to embrace this mixed race girl, and Dukat was all about himself. This could potentially damage his career and his family, and therefore he wanted nothing to do with this indiscretion of his that he'd committed during the war. I thought the storyline involving Penny Johnson Gerald and Avery Brooks was really good. Avery Brooks's acting was a little bit broad in places, but for me, where they nailed it was where the conversation suddenly became a full-blown argument, and Sisko was completely, what did I say? We've all married. How many of us have been in that situation? And we're suddenly like in a full-scale war, and as men, we are completely clueless as to what we've done. Which led to the great scene in the middle where Bashir and Dax are talking to Sisko, and Sisko's just sat there going, why did I even tell these people of my problems? Because they're just not taking it seriously. And for me, I felt that this episode really worked. I really enjoyed it. There's a couple of places, where the acting doesn't quite meet up with what I expect it to be. But I loved Mark Alamo, because he dominates any episode that he's in. I love that Nana Visitor is more than capable of going toe-to-toe with him, which we've seen. She's a really good actress when given the choice. And I think she's kind of been downplayed this season. They've kind of watered Kira down a bit this year. So it was nice to give her an episode to see, that she's just as feisty as she ever was. And I love the whole idea of taking the next step in Sisko's relationship. His wife's been dead for 10 years at this point. What is an acceptable period of mourning for that? I think it's a very interesting question. And I love that Jake is very much behind the idea of his dad having a companion and not just living with the memory of his mother. And for me, I thought this was a really strong episode in a season that has started out strong and continues to be so. So I don't agree with either of you that it was slow or that it wasn't quite as interesting as it could be. I thought they nailed some of the very interesting beats and character moments that they're going to run with as they go forward that all came out of this show.
My response to that, my counterpoint is, oh, shut up. actually, my response to that is, I don't disagree with your point. I think conceptually, I like this episode. I like the ideas that you're talking about. I think in execution, for the most part, it was kind of done in a way that just was somewhat uninteresting. I think it could have been executed in a more dramatic fashion. I think it could have been done just a little bit less paint by the numbers. I don't know. I didn't think there was anything clever about the way it was portrayed. I didn't think the acting was that great on any level. I mean, I didn't think Mark Alamo was bad, but I didn't think he really brought his A game to this one. I think, you know, him against Kira should have the same level of excitement to it as him against Garrick or whoever, you know, when they're sparring off. And this one just didn't seem to have that edge to it that I like to see with them. And it's not a specific issue or point that I think is badly, you know, made. I just think it could have been done in a more exciting way. And maybe the, you know, with all the things you're talking about, maybe it could have been done in a more exciting two-part episode with more going on and more potential for danger for them as they're going on this planet. It just seemed kind of dull as they were going on the planet. Okay, yeah, now we're in there. Now we're dressed as Breen. Now we're rescuing them. I'm going to hold a gun to her, but then she hugs me. Yay, Daddy. I don't know. It just...
Yeah. All right, British boy.
Yeah. I'm going to hang up in a minute. I am offended. No, I'm not.
Well, you're not British?
No, I'm not offended.
No. Why do the Breen look like Boosh from the Empire from Return of the Jedi, the disguise that Princess Leia uses to get in Jabba's palace? Can you tell me that?
Clearly, they're on Tatooine, numbnuts. They go to the same.
Why do they go to
the same store?
I guess. But am I the only one that's ever made that comparison? Am I the only one that thinks that they look exactly like Boosh?
No, because it's the first thing I thought when I saw them. Okay. The real answer in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion is they could not be bothered / didn't have the time to come up with what the Breen actually looked like, so they just dumped him in a costume that was readily available.
Yep, but don't make it look like a character in another movie.
That was also on a sand planet.
Mm. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. It does look like Boosh. But, I don't care, really.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think this was a bad episode. But it just didn't... For some... Now, again, it may have been a little too late at night when I watched it each time. But that being said, the next episode I watched, I stayed awake through that. But I don't know. There's just something about
it. I'm going to criticize the next one, too. Be prepared.
Well, yeah, I got some criticisms with the way... but anyway, that's the next episode.
Everybody come back in 2 weeks to hear that.
Hmm. Next time... Wait, what? What happened? Where did the whole episode go?
Later.
Oh, I'm not supposed to... Wait for it.
No, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, because you're not saying you are wrong to like this episode. I mean, that may come later, but I just think I got more out of this than you two did, and that's as simple as that. I don't think this is a massive disagreement for whatever reason, and you can't say what that reason is. Art is art, but I got something out of this one that I don't think you two did, and it's as simple as that.
That would be enjoyment.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I really did enjoy this one. I felt the 46 minutes whizzed by, and I enjoyed all of it. I don't disagree with what Bill says. The spike scene didn't quite work as well as it could have done. And there is...
It started to, but it just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But it got better once it got to... Oh, I get the point. Very funny. But, I mean, it got better... After they're both sitting there, and Dukat just calmly says, when they talk about who they expect to find in the cave, and he's like, "And I will find her, and I will kill her." And although I find it highly unbelievable that Kira would not start asking him then, because then we cut to them walking through the sand again, and she's like, "What do you mean you're gonna kill her?" Like, you wouldn't have said that. Oh god, that would be just like being married to somebody, because you think the argument's over, you have it, then you get up the next day and you're doing something, all of a sudden that argument just picks right back up and you're like, "Really? I thought this was done. I'm gonna kill her, alright? Stop bitching at me about it.
That's kind of Andy's point with the Cisco thing. So I guess maybe they were trying to mirror it. I don't know.
Maybe they were trying to mirror that in the other story. I think though the point of that was that Akira explains, if he had planned on killing her, he wouldn't have told Kira. There was a part of him that didn't want to do it.
That's true. Not a bad thought, and maybe they could have explored that a little bit more. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah, possibly. You know, could have played on his, I mean, he's got a massive ego, so they could have played on that a little bit more, that he didn't really want to do this. But at what point do you humanize your villain and it get to the point where you don't see him as the villain anymore? Because that's the danger that they run here with Ducat.
Well, I think that's a good thing, though. If you could get him to not seem totally villainous, and even, you know, not to, to talk too much about where the story's going to go, but to make him, you know, start to become somebody you can almost relate to, and then flip that around again, I don't know that that's a bad thing.
See, I just think Star Trek has this tendency, they even did it with the Borg, of trying to give the villains a human face. And sometimes I think they kind of go a little bit too far with that. I do just want the Borg to remain this implacable foe.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was only going to finish with Mark Alamo is such a magnetic actor. I don't necessarily feel that you had to go that far with Ducat.
See, the Borg analogy is an interesting one, though, because I think that when they did I, Borg, and they introduced you into the Star Trek universe, I thought that was a really good episode. The problem is, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
And then they went to the, you know, that little side group of Borg who were independent. And then you went into, you know, the Borg Queen. And you know, it's almost like, you know, they didn't want to de-villainize them. But they backed themselves into a little bit of a corner, and then they kind of had to just pretend, oh, that doesn't exist. You know?
Yeah, they had to kind of dial it back for First Contact, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. I definitely that was the way they went.
Whereas in this, they do concentrate on Ducat and then bring him the other side. So I'm very interested in rewatching all of that and seeing how far they're willing to go to humanize him. Because there is a danger there of making him too likable, and I wonder how much of that is down to the actor.
His charisma.
Yeah, he's very charismatic. But that invites the other comparison, doesn't it? That he's also a political figure amongst his own people. So does that charisma play into how he gets people to follow him?
I've been thinking a lot lately about the different types of villains you see in comics and movies, whatever, and just trying to kind of categorize them a little bit in my mind. And why I'm doing this, I don't know. It's just probably a manifestation of some form of OCD. But now you have the villain who is just the megalomaniac who thinks the world is better under his rule.
And Ra's al Ghul.
We'll go Ra's al Ghul as the example on that. You have the guy who just wants to see the world burn. Insane. You have the sociopath. I'm thinking more along the lines of, say, a Tony Soprano kind of guy there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the one who truly believes himself to be the hero. And I think Ducat is a little bit of that guy.
Yeah.
He's also got a little bit of sociopath in him, but he's mostly the guy who thinks he's doing right by his world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't mind you, you know, not humanizing him, but making him more sympathetic or making his mission more understandable. I think it's, you know, it's excellent writing when you can do that and yet still have him be the villain of your piece.
Yeah, because this ties in with Chain of Command really nicely as well, where Gul Madred actually says to Picard, you know, we tried it your way and we had famine and we had people with illnesses, and now we are strong and we're a military-led planet, and nobody's hungry anymore. And so from just that one sentence, you've essentially got Ducat as well. You've got Ducat's character there, where Cardassia is in a much better place for doing things the way they do it. And he also
tells Kira that the Bajoran people are stronger now because of what the Cardassians did to them. You know, that they were an introverted, meek, religious society, and now they're, you know, more outgoing. That he actually made it sound like that the whole occupation was a good thing.
Yeah. So from his point of view, it was. And Kira's just looking at him, what like the concentration camps and the deaths. All of that was
the forced labor.
That was a good thing.
The strip mining,
and you know, so that I found all of that really fascinating, because I think the Cardassians are the best developed alien race in Star Trek. Because there are so many times throughout Deep Space Nine and a couple of episodes of Next Generation where you're actually sat there going, you know, I can actually see the point. But you are talking to the guy who sometimes thinks Ra's al Ghul should just win. He's right. Let him win. Let him wipe everyone out and start again. So maybe I'm just a villain, inherently.
No. So sometimes I think, you know, maybe if we just started over, things would be much better.
But I think if you understand your villain, that means he's well-defined and well-written. It doesn't mean you have to agree with him, necessarily.
But if
you understand his motivations, and they seem legitimate to you, whether or not you agree with them, I think that's a key to good writing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he's exceptionally well-developed throughout the run of the series. But I think that's the point that I'm trying to make in my own cack-handed way. As much as we may like and admire Mark Alamo, how much of what Dukat says do we inherently disagree with? As much as we may see his point, where do we fall on the scale? Are we with Kira or are we with Dukat? And if you're asking those questions, then the episode has done an exceptional job of engaging you.
And the other area where I think they've done an exceptional job is I don't think it's 100% one-sided.
No.
You do see Dukat's point of view. You may not agree with it because you see the bigger picture and how it's affected another planet, another world, another species. But you understand where he's coming from and why he's doing what he does, at least to some extent. Now, Kira, you have the same thing, and sometimes she becomes overly militant, and you're saying, whoa, you're going too far here, Kira. You know what I mean? So I like that. I like that neither one is, it's not black and white. There's shades of gray, and that's the way real life is.
Yeah.
Well, because Kira's, like Sarah said earlier, Kira's always seems to have had a hard time turning off that freedom fighter switch in her head, whereas Dukat can, you know, he's like a social chameleon. It's like, well, this is my new norm. This is how I'm supposed to act, and this is the way I will act. Where Kira's like, you disgust me.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying earlier on. Is she now at the point where her own hatred cannot let her let go? Whereas as far as Dukat's concerned, the Bajorans aren't the enemy anymore, so we move on.
But sometimes the way he plays that, you feel like he's like, oh, well, we have a peace treaty now. It feels so slimy.
Yes.
and just when he says it, that you're like, does he really believe that? Or is he just playing along because he has to?
See, I think he believes there's a peace treaty and he'll abide by it within reason. But it doesn't
until
mean
it's not there. Yeah. Like,
he is a soldier. So he'll follow the rules to the extent that he feels he needs to. Now, he'll stretch the rules himself, but, you know, as far as he's concerned, that is the new norm.
Hence the name of this episode, Indiscretion. Oh, should we discuss how, it was brought up a little bit earlier about how he's got a thing for the Bajoran ladies?
Yeah, go ahead. Go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he clearly does that, doesn't he? And as far as he's concerned, Kira's at the top of that heap.
Now, does he have it because they're fighting him, or does he just like the Bajoran design, I guess we could say, or the Bajoran package? Or is you know, I mean, like, we don't really get a big history on his mistress, other than, you know, does he just like Bajorans, or does he just like, you know, was it more like a conquering thing?
I think, you know, and I'm reading into this a little bit, but I think that his attraction is a combination of the women who were being oppressed by them,
that he's dominating,
to fight it. I think he likes that fight.
Or does it become Stockholm syndrome? You know, did his Bajoran lady just grow to love him because she had no choice?
But that doesn't explain his affection and attraction.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, that works in reverse, too, I would think.
What, that she has affection for him?
No, that he would grow to love her eventually just by, you know, being, you know. I don't know. I've never taken someone hostage.
That we know of.
Don't knock it till you try it.
Shh.
That's a horrible thing. Okay, you say it's a joke. I take that back.
You do have a basement. You did throw things down at me when I was
it was bacon. Basement.
Put the lotion. It puts the bacon on its skin or it gets
it
the hose again.
The bacon.
Bajoran bacon. Mm. Would it be a pig with a little ridge on its snout?
So, to shift over a little bit, the Sisko aspect of the plot. I agree with you, Andy, that when the combat begins, it's kind of well done in that Sisko's, you know, Sisko's giving us the Ricky Ricardo, what happened?
What'd I say?
But I also thought that the argument itself seemed a little forced to me, the beginning of it. It didn't really feel natural. I don't know. And then you are right that sometimes we do walk into arguments that don't seem natural to us anyway.
I don't know, man. She dropped the bomb on him. Hey, by the way, I'm going to be living here now. What? Okay.
That's a big step.
Yeah, maybe you can. Maybe you can get me a place to live on the station. Sure, I guess. You know, he's a busy man. He's got a lot of things on his mind. He has an entire station to run, and now his piece on the side is going to be living there full time. He's got to juggle all his freighter captains that come in and out. It's just screwed up his whole dynamic. Wait, I'm sorry. I thought Sisko was a player. My bad.
It's player.
Player.
I suppose it depends on work. I mean, the problem with this is we're all men. And I suppose we could really have done with a female viewpoint on this, but I didn't watch this one with Angela, and she's not here anyway, so I can't get a female viewpoint from it.
I was wondering why nobody was smacking you in the back of the head.
Yeah. Why?
Yeah.
I was just reacting to it. I think I've had arguments like that. Apparently I've said something that set her off, and you're like, wait a minute, what? When did this stop being funny?
Yeah. It's because you didn't give the answer that they expected you to give or the enthusiasm you were supposed to show. And you're left going, what? Yeah. What did I do?
So I actually felt that entire conversation rang quite true. That suddenly he's captain of the station, but he still had the rug pulled under him, from under him, by his girlfriend at that point. And although I did think he played it a little bit too broadly, I loved his face in the scene where Bashir and Dax are talking to him, and that beautiful bit where Quark comes over and says, "Who knows more about women than me?" and Bashir's little everybody was actually one of the best line deliveries he's ever done. Just the casual way he threw that out, and so the comedy worked, even though I thought Avery Brooks was a bit forced in places. But I did feel that was a very good and realistic depiction of a relationship that is going from he's a little bit on the side to something else. And let's be honest, it's always us that aren't ready for it. I don't know, I don't want to speak for you two, but it's always the woman in my life that pushes me forward to actually do something.
No comment.
No comment.
Without her saying, "I am ready to take this next step," Sisko would have just happily left it alone, wouldn't he?
Oh, that's what you're talking about. I thought you meant like, are you going to mow the grass today? Are you going to go to the store? Are you going to fix that? Are you going to do this? Yes, 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 yes. Shut up. Leave me alone. I work.
Well, not all.
Stop bothering
not
me.
Just that generally, but,
I know.
Okay, so I'm obviously on my own then. You're just leaving me out to dry.
Absolutely.
On that one. So, thank you very much.
Andy will be turning in his man card at the end of the episode.
You know, let's be fair. Bill and I don't want to comment because we don't want the off chance that somebody listens to this and says, "I heard what you said."
Yeah, well, see, I don't
We don't want this to create that argument.
There's no danger at all because I don't listen, so I'm pretty sure Angela doesn't.
Yeah, so my wife will, like, 6 months from now, So, I make you do things. What? How did you hear that?
I make you mow the lawn, eh?
No, it's not what I meant. It's not what this recording says. Oh, God.
I now have on recorded, so you're shit out of luck.
And I'll be like, Benjamin!
So the question probably is, that Angela would want to know, is what would Blaine say?
I'm sure that is at the forefront of her mind.
Oh, wait.
Oh, go ahead. Go.
The reason, okay, you, about 10, 15 minutes ago, you said, what is that that popped up? I didn't realize that was going to pop it up. I put in a picture of Bozo the Clown because that's what our Bajoran buddy looks like with his hair out to the side. That's the first thing I thought when I was looking at his hair going, God, he looks like Bozo the Clown.
Just stick with him for a little bit. One of the things I found so, I don't know, in my mind, the smuggler, rogue, I'm thinking Han Solo. And then I get this little.
You get paunchy, overfed Han Solo.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's not.
Well, you know what? Hey, let's look at it this way. That's probably a more realistic version of a smuggler than Han Solo, because think about it. If you're a guy that's on the run, flying through space all the time, smuggling and traveling back and forth, you're no different than a long-haul trucker. Now, of course, now I've just insulted all the long-haul truckers. No, because you're going to be like me. If you're in the car all the time driving, you're going to have to do something to keep yourself, you know, awake. And what does that end up being? Eating. So, if I was a smuggler, yeah, I'd probably look no different than I do now. But I'd probably comb my hair, at least.
Or wash your face once in a while.
And wash myself, yes. Pull into the little space drive, you know, diner drive-in. You know.
So instead of Han Solo, he looks more like a scruffy little nerf herder.
That guy does look like a scruffy looking nerf herder. He needs to pull into the space truck shop for a sonic shower every now and then. Yeah.
And you know, the only problem is if they had made him a good looking roguish guy, then they'd have to have a romantic connection to Kira, because that's what they do.
Oh, what? A frumpy guy can't get with Kira? Yeah, nope. I see how it is. Nope. Yeah, uh-huh.
Don't work that way.
It's got to be, you know, you have to be a stick of wood, acting wise.
Well, they That's do a, like it to be hard.
Oh, and pointy.
Well, like hard wood.
Like a Ducat's butt.
Yeah.
Sorry,
they never discuss things like that, do they? Like, you know, does he have those ridges all the way down the front?
Oh, are come those on.
What about Klingons? Are they ribs for your pleasure?
Oh, maybe it's like a cat. It's barbed.
You know, you said they don't discuss that, and I'm thinking there's a reason.
All right, anyway, now what does Blaine say?
You were going to tell us what Blaine said a good 5 minutes ago.
Well, I'll tell you what Blaine would say.
Okay.
Blaine would say, if Blaine were here right now, Blaine would say, hi, guys. Why am I here right now?
I'm sure he'd kick an ass or two. That's what Blaine Dalla would do.
He would say, more humanization of Cardassians, with great opportunities for Nana Visitor to show off her acting chops. More Ducat.
They are very ample acting chops.
More Ducat is good. The references to Cardassians liking things hotter than other species makes for nice continuity. And I do enjoy the additional political backstory on Cardassia Prime. Somehow, it just doesn't work for me, despite everything that's going for it, including the development of Sisko's relationship with Cassidy Yates and introduction and origin of Zael. It's not bad, but just should be better. So it sounds like Blaine is on the side of the people who know better, and he's with me and Bill.
From that email... All I got is that I hear in my head, was a song by the Power Station? Some like it hot, so let's turn up the heat till we fly. Some like Ducat, so. Yeah, okay, that just fell apart too.
So,
I don't have my musical muse today.
Now that we've gotten Blaine's point of view on it, which is the right one, we should probably rate this episode.
Oh, we don't have any email? No email in the email bag?
We do email before we rate the episode. We do blame.
Oh. All right, shut up. It's only
like, what is it? It's like the 70th episode. I'm not sure that you would get it.
It's been like 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since I talked to you. We all sit down and record on Skype too.
It's been 1 week since we pissed off all of our female listenership.
It'll be 2 days till we say we're sorry.
Okay, so I thought this was an okay episode. I thought, you know, execution wise it was, you know, it's entertaining but nothing special, which would lead me right to the middle, which would be a 2.5. but I do agree with Andy that some of the concepts given were superior to that, and they did lay some groundwork for some future stuff to do and to play with in the grand picture. So I'm going to bump it up a half a star for that and say 3 stars.
Yeah, it's better than average. I was going to say 3.5, but I think that's a little bit too high. So I think I'm gonna scale it to 3. It would be 3 Bajoran unwanted children.
I'm probably going to settle roughly the same place. I think I'm going to give it 3.5. Just because I've been the voice of dissent.
Did you say reason? No. I'm the voice of reason.
The voice of dissent. No, I'm not one to say that my opinion is the right one.
That's because it's not. Looks yourself
you,
aware.
You two are just not smart enough to understand this episode.
That's what it is.
We don't understand the nuances of Deep Space Nine.
Exactly right. I don't think it's a top flight one. I don't think it's DS9 at its finest. I just seem to enjoy this one a little bit more than you two, and it's as simple as that. I don't think either one of us are wrong. So I'm going to go 3.5.
You were more entertained by the episode conceptually than we were.
Yeah, I think that's all it was. I think it was more a case of I seemed to just enjoy this one more than you, and that's all it was. Maybe if I'd watched it tomorrow or next week, I'd be the same place you did. Maybe it just caught me on the right day. I don't know. But I just seem to like this one more than you two.
We'll straighten you out yet, Andy. All right, so that's Indiscretion. You want to read? I think we have one piece of email that we can do.
Okay. I'll do it.
You will? Oh, wow.
Well, seeing as the two of you whiny little bitches have moaned constantly about the fact that I don't do emails, I will volunteer in full breach of my DiMonzo contract. I must
We have
add.
Waxed poetic about
it's
your
not
lack
in
of
my email. Contract.
I don't read emails until I get my second breakfast.
He's not the Messiah.
He's a very naughty boy.
Our first email, our only email, you and this exist, not spam, is from Joseph Lake. And there's a lovely little thumbnail picture of him, so we can all say hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Paul, Bill and Andrew. Joe here, and may I thank you for your podcast existing. I love DS9, and I'm really appreciating your takes on the show. I watched this growing up, and Captain Sisko's determination and leadership is what inspired me to get my degree in management, graduating next Friday, top 10% of my class. Congratulations.
Congratulations,
when was,
Joe.
When was, so this was sent on May the 11th, so he's now graduated then.
I'm thinking that we should take credit for that degree.
Yeah. It was absolutely nothing to do with him. He shouldn't take the credit for it. It was all down to us. Clearly.
We inspired.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just like Andy with the episode. Yes.
Well done, Joe. In all seriousness, congratulations. I listened to the first 4 episodes, then jumped ahead to the Obsidian Order Tal Shiar two-parter, as it's one of my favourites. Don't worry, though, I will go back and listen to the rest. No one touched on my favourite part of the episode, though, the camera angles. I really like the angles used when Tane's Romulan ship was exploding and how it highlighted his instability upon realising he'd been duped to such a degree. It helped the viewer feel the discomfort Tane was feeling. Just my opinion, though. I'd like to hear yours. I always like it when the direction matches what the storytelling's doing, and I'm surprised that we didn't actually point that out, because we do try and look at stuff like camera angles and stuff. But
Yeah, because if you think about that, Tane's whole life has been built on being in control and being the smartest man in the room, and to be outsmarted, he's totally, you know, his wits were not about him at that point.
Yeah.
He was really just knocked for a loop.
On another note, thank you for having such radically different voices. Well, apart from when Bill tries to imitate me, obviously, where he's indistinguishable from the real thing. It helps me distinguish who is saying what and to know that there are indeed three people, though. Be prepared
there
for many more.
There are
emails.
Three people!
There are three hosts!
Be prepared for many more emails ending transmission, Joe. Well, thank you for emailing in, Joe. Congratulations on your degree in management.
And looking forward to more contact from
you. Yeah, we're looking forward to hear from you in the future. It's always nice to hear from new people, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Thank you, Joe.
That's it for the email bag, though, so we've got nothing else. So all that remains for us to say is, next time, our all-new episode. Listen to
Are we going to read the book?
Next time.
Oh, we'll do it next time?
Okay. Next time!
Next time!
Our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. We read a book. And
no.
It'll be more exciting than this episode.
And Dax breaks. She's not a Bajoran, is she? What is she?
She's a
Trill.
Trill, yeah. I was like, she's a what?
I'll say that again. And Dax breaks Trill law by wishing to be rejoined. And given that she wants to be rejoined with Susanna Thompson, who can blame her?
Time.
I've never let my past lives interfere with my job.
Is a relative thing.
You know that woman? I know her. She used to be my wife.
Taboos.
You're Jadzia Dax. And you have a responsibility as a joined Trill.
Can have serious consequences.
I'm really glad you're here.
But how close?
I love her, Benjamin.
Is too close on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
See you next time. Rejoin, cause it feels so good. Bye.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Darn, that's the end.